Welcome to the Real Estate Investing Club. This is the place everyday real estate investors gather to share their best stories, biggest insights, and favorite tactics to grow a portfolio of cash flowing properties in today's market. Here's your host, Gabe Peterson.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Real Estate Investing Club. Today we have Tom Dunkel with us from Belrose Storage Group. I am super excited to have Tom here because he focuses on self-storage, which is where my heart is in the real estate sphere. So Tom, thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Thanks, Gabe. It's great to be here. Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. I told you before we got on here, we like to start with people's stories. We like to hear how people got to where they are today. So why don't you take us back to yours? How'd you get started in real estate in the first place?
Sure. Yeah, I'll keep it brief. But I was in corporate America. I was actually a corporate finance guy doing mergers and acquisitions and raising capital. I was in the aerospace industry, which was really fun. I worked with some amazing people with just phenomenal backgrounds, you know, military guys who, you know, were at the Naval Academy, and then they went to Wharton for their MBAs. And I actually worked with astronauts, fighter pilots. So it was pretty cool. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Just a very high bar, you know, for that kind of crowd. So it really helped me as a young deal guy to just really get a nice solid foundation for what I wanted to do later on, which was, you know, I had actually wanted to get into real estate for some time. Oh, wow. But just, you know, life took me in a different direction for a while. So I got into real estate in 2006. My timing wasn't great, of course.
It's all right.
But jumped in with both feet, left corporate America, and just, you know, immediately started getting my butt kicked in a very difficult market at that time. Learned a lot of hard lessons. You know, here I was coming out of a very successful corporate career. You know, MBA and all that stuff. I was not prepared. I got prepared pretty quickly, just trial by fire, over those next few years. And, so started out like a lot of folks doing, residential, you know, fix and flips and rentals and wholesaling and stuff like that. So I was really glad to get out of that business a few years back. And so that I could focus on self-storage. We've done a couple of other things in the real estate world as well. Hard money lending. We have a short-term rental, Airbnb portfolio, vacation portfolio. But our primary, focus right now is self-storage. So we've accumulated about a quarter million, square feet of storage so far. We're in Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. We just put a deal under contract in Kentucky. Where's the other one? Anyway, we've got some others in the pipeline. Oh, New York State. We've got a few others in the pipeline as well. So we're super active. We love the space.
Nice, man. So do I. I love it. Yeah. So yeah, you got started. That's not the ideal time to get started. I'm not going to lie, but hey, I'm sure you got some lessons quickly learned, which is always good. So why did you start? I mean, you know, everybody starts in kind of the fix and flip wholesale model. Is there a specific reason why you chose that? Or was it just, you know, it's what you saw in media, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, exactly. It was just what I saw. You know, I figured starting out, you know, it just seemed doable and manageable to build a business in that. And then, you know, I think like a lot of folks, you know, you kind of quickly realize like, wow, this is
really hard.
This is a lot of work. And man, I really have a lot of respect for the people who do well in that business because I didn't do so great. And but, you know, the commercial side is actually fitting quite well with my background in corporate finance because I'm raising equity. You know, I'm putting our syndications together. I'm putting the debt together. I'm negotiating the purchase agreement. So all that stuff is just the stuff that I brought from my corporate life into my entrepreneurial life. So that that definitely helped out a lot for sure. Yep.
Yeah, that definitely gives you a leg up to have, you know, that kind of experience coming into real estate. It's something that's really hard to learn on the job, which is something I learned pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I like that you guys went into, you know, was self-storage, is that the first asset class that you chose when you got into commercial, or have you dabbled, did you start in, you know, multifamily, something like that?
So I did explore multifamily for a while, and I've actually, even to this day, I still invest as a limited partner in multifamily deals. I think that's a great space, but for whatever reason, I wasn't able to kind of get any traction building my own business in the multifamily space. And it was, you know, this was a few years back when the market was really getting hot and cap rates were really compressing, and there were, I felt like I was just not prepared. I didn't have the right team, to really get to go after it. But that's, when we got into self-storage, we really did spend time putting a great team together. So I'm excited about our team for self-storage. And so that's given us the ability to really scale up.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. So yeah, let's just pivot and just talk about self-storage. This is what I love to talk about. So I'm super excited to kind of learn from you. You already mentioned, you know, the reason that you kind of got your feet under you in self-storage is you built a team. So what are, let's say, the first few, three, you know, handful of roles that were really crucial to, you know, developing your business?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question, Gabe. And if, you know, like a lot of folks out there, we kind of stumbled around through our first few deals, and you know, somehow we managed to get them bought and financed and closed. And you know, looking back on those, I'm not really sure how we did, because we weren't very well organized. But but the way we are today is we built an accountability chart. So my partner Joe Downs, he's in charge of the front end of the funnel. So he's filling the funnel. He's got the virtual assistants, you know, kind of working with him there. He has a development person who's helping him out on a part-time basis. And then when a warm lead comes in, he takes it from there. And his job is to get it from that first conversation to the letter of intent. Once he gets it to letter of intent, it merges over into my area, which is I get it from the LOI to under agreement to closed. So that entails doing all the underwriting, getting the financial and the operating due diligence done, arranging for the debt financing. And then I put together the investor syndication and put the investor deck together, and, you know, just run it through the contract and that whole process. And then we get that deal closed, and then it merges into my partner Tim Kane's lane, and he's in charge of operations. So he and his team, they get the transition started about 30 days out prior to closing. And so when we do close, he's hitting the ground running with our value add strategies. You know, we already have the market totally nailed. You know, we know exactly what we're going to be doing with our rates. From day one, we get started with our improvement projects, you know, whether it's adding security cameras or lighting or, you know, just whatever other technology we can implement. And then we just, you know, we run those value add strategies, and we have key performance indicators that we track, and we track those on a at least weekly basis, so that we don't get any surprises with a bunch of customers moving out, or, you know, some issue with a gate at a particular facility or what have you. So he and his team are on top of all that. And then once we've squeezed the juice out of the self-storage facility, you know, we're not coupon clippers. We're trying to really grab that value. And so we exit those facilities and roll that profit into the next deal, so we can compound our returns. But that's, you know, we're now organized that way, and it kind of rolls off my tongue pretty easily, but I'm telling you, it took us a little while to get here.
No, I know how that goes for sure. Yeah. And it sounds like, I mean, you're structured very similarly to me and my partners. You have one person who's kind of doing the initial conversation with the seller, getting it to LOI, and then I'll do all the, you know, raising the debt, negotiating the PSA, that kind of stuff. Do you guys manage yourself, or do you have third-party property management to help you out?
We manage it ourselves, but it's so we have we have a consultant who's our operations consultant. So she works with my partner, Tim Kane. And one of her duties is to hire the manager for that facility. So we don't, we use a hybrid management strategy. So we don't have someone boots on the ground all day, every day. We have someone who's in the market, or at least, you know, a couple few hour drive from the market so that they can be there when needed. But everyone's, you know, renting facilities from their smartphone, renting units from their smartphones these days. They're not really going into a storefront and, you know, meeting somebody. So that is one of the, I think, one of the trends in the industry that you've, maybe you've seen it as well. But yeah, we're, that's our high level. That's our, that's kind of our management strategy.
Nice. Yep. I like it. So I'm going to take one small step back and kind of go to why did you guys choose self-storage in the beginning? What was so attractive about the asset that you wanted to move on it?
Yeah, great question. We just saw that there was so much opportunity because it is such a fragmented market, and it's dominated by moms and pops. A lot of people I talk to think that, you know, Public Storage, CubeSmart, Extra Space, that they own every facility. And the fact is they only own about 25%, give or take, of the market. So that other 75% is a lot of, you know, smaller players like us, or moms and pops that aren't really running it like a business. So that gives us the opportunity to jump in there, kick in our value add strategies, be aggressive with our rate raises, which we are, because we do our homework and we figure out where that supply and demand curve is and where we can push rates. And then we're adding things like tenant protection and other revenue streams. And, you know, we're not afraid to have vacancies. We kind of look at it like a hotel model where, if, you know, if we're more than 90% full, we're not charging enough. Old friend of mine was in the hotel business, and that's what he told me, how he ran his hotels was, hey, if I'm full, I'm not charging enough. So we've adopted that same philosophy.
That's actually exactly what we did. We we're closing on a property out in Indiana right now, and the seller has had it, he said, 99 to 98% filled, you know, the entire time he's owned it. And we looked at his rates, and he was like way under market. And he's like, well, there's the reason. So
that's like, they love to say that. They're like, oh yeah, we're full. I'm like, that's the goal. It's no. The goal is to make money. So, so, you know, let's push those rates, and yeah, we're going to have some vacancies, but I think if you do the math, it's better to have some vacancies at a higher rate than to have everything full at a much, at a rate that's much too low.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. So when you guys do close on your facilities, what are the primary value add strategies that you like to see going in? Let's just take, you know, under market rates off the table, because that one's kind of standard. Give a few other things that you guys look for.
Sure. Yeah. Obviously rates is the big one. But other things we look for that make a deal look attractive for us is just a lack of marketing presence. Mm-hmm. So maybe they don't have a sign, they don't have a website. You know, they're not findable, because like we talked about a minute ago, folks are renting storage units sitting on their couch, like I'm doing, you know, with their smartphone, just, hey, I need a storage unit, you know, you know, I'm moving, I'm not working at my office anymore. I gotta turn my extra bedroom into an office. So I gotta find a storage unit. So they go to Google. And so if you're not on Google, you know, forget about it. You're probably not going to be getting those tenants. But other things we look for are absolutely, we're looking at the market. We want to see that it's at the very least, it's a very steady, robust market, like up in New York State. You know, New York State isn't a booming area, but we're acquiring that facility because it's a wealthy, steady area, and there's plenty of jobs and a diverse economy. That's another thing we look for. We're not looking for, you know, one factory towns. We're looking for diverse economies where there's lots of jobs in lots of different industries. And then we're looking for a facility that maybe needs a little tender, loving care. Sometimes, you know, these facilities, the owners let them get a little run down. Maybe they're not as well lit as they should be, especially these days. You know, people like to see security cameras, so we're implementing them just to make folks feel comfortable going on the property. And then, another big thing is delinquencies. A lot of these moms and pops, they know their customers, and they're happy to be friends with, you know, with their pal John, and, you know, I'm not going to raise rates on John. And, you know, if he's a little late here and there, you know, it's no big deal. You know, he'll make it up to me. I'll see him, you know, at the bar next week or something. So that's a lot of the mentality of these folks. But, you know, we go in there and we run it like a business, and businesses collect their receivables. So if they're running late, you know, obviously we give them the statutory amount of time to get things fixed. But if it doesn't get paid, that unit goes to auction, it gets cleaned out, it gets swept out, and it's back up for rent that same day a lot of the time. So that's certainly something that we do. And we're proud to say across our portfolio, I think the industry wide metric is about 10% delinquency is normal. Across our portfolio, we're at 2%. And in some of our facilities, we're at 0% delinquency. So we really love that, and we incentivize our managers to hit those kind of metrics.
Oh yeah. And that's really good. I didn't know 10% was the average. That's interesting.
I might have made that up, but I think I heard that somewhere.
That sounds good to me. One of the two deals ago that we closed on in self-storage, you mentioned that, like, the owners, some mom and pop owners, they're just friends with all their tenants. And that is exactly what had happened. This guy, we had multiple people call us and they're like, "Hey, I had a relationship with Joe, Bob, whatever. And I was mowing the grass over here for rent. Can we continue that relationship?" And we're like, "Sorry, no, yeah. we gotta collect rent this time." But yeah, it's amazing how many times you see that when you start digging into these mom and pop properties out there.
Sure. Yep.
All right. Last question. We are coming up to our time, so I am going to have to push us into the quick question round. But one more question before we move on. Where do you see self-storage going in the next, let's say, 10 years?
I see it as a growth sector. I think it's more and more institutionalized now. So it's attracting private equity and bigger investor dollars. And it's becoming more mainstream, where you're finding old Kmart stores or Sears stores, you know, these old, big box stores that are now empty being converted into self-storage. So instead of being the, you know, rusty, dusty, metal boxes in the back of the industrial complex, you know, they're going to be much more in the traffic of, you know, everyday, you know, convenience and running errands, you know, to the, you know, dropping the kids at school and running to the grocery store. There's going to be a self-storage facility there, because that's going to be the kind of that next generation. And I wouldn't be surprised if some smaller footprint kinds of self-storage facilities start popping up, because there are these odd shaped, odd sized commercial lots in various places that aren't really they're not usable for anything else. You can't build a bank branch on it or a fast food restaurant or something. So, you know, those kinds of lots might be picked up and with a smaller footprint self-storage facilities, just again for the convenience factor.
Yeah. Yeah. That is another good thing about self-storage, is it's really easy to operate and build, and it's just such a simple business. And I love that. Mm-hmm. All right. That wraps it up. We have gone through our time, so it's time to jump into the quick question round. Are you ready?
Oh, geez. I hope so.
All right. Let's do it. It starts out with books or any form of education. If you like YouTube channels, whatever, give me two recommendations, one for general life wisdom and one for real estate specific.
Sure. So my favorite non-business, non-real estate book of all time is called The Last Place on Earth. And it's about, at the turn of the century, not this most recent century, but the last century, going into the 1900s, the last place on Earth to be explored was the South Pole. And there was a competition to see who could get there first. And the competition was between The very sorry to any of the British listeners out there, but the very arrogant British Navy, who, you know, they had lots of money, they had lots of, you know, just the military training, they had all those kinds of things, and then they were going up against Raoul Amundsen, who was a Norwegian, and he's basically kind of like a what I would call like a Norwegian hippie, and he went and to train himself and his team, which was, you know, mostly Norwegians, but some Danes and some others. They went and lived with the Eskimos in Greenland for a while, just to see how they lived and how they used dogs and all that stuff. So I'll tee that up for you. I'll let you read the book to figure out what happens there and see who wins. But I think that book is fantastic because, even though it's kind of an adventure book, it's also an incredible book on leadership, because the British, like I was saying, they were very arrogant. They didn't really think they needed a plan because they're like, oh, we're the British Navy. Yeah, we got this. But meanwhile, you know, the Norwegian team was, you know, they were very disciplined. They stuck to a plan. They calculated out like their food and their rations and the fuel they needed for their lanterns and all that stuff. And they were extremely detail oriented and extremely disciplined. And so I'm sure I'm giving away, you know, who wins the race. But I think for leadership purposes, I think it's a really cool book.
Cool.
On the other side of things, geez, there's so many really good books. Back to kind of the team theme that we hit on earlier. We're big fans of Who Not How. Mm-hmm. Is a book out there right now, which is, you know, when you run into a business problem, don't think about how do I overcome this? How do I fix this? You got to think about who can I go to? Who's an expert in this area that can help me overcome this issue or problem? And we've adopted that at Belrose Storage Group. And it's really helped us out a lot. And it makes you go into these problem solving issues as with an abundance mindset, because we're all about, you know, we'll partner with people, we'll divvy things up, you know, financially if it makes sense. And, you know, we're not afraid to do that because we have, you know, we all want to reach this goal.
Yep. I love it. Both great recommendations. I'm going to have to pick up that The Last Place on Earth. That sounds like a good one.
That's a lot of fun.
I read that, the William Shackleton book, and it's
okay.
Really good stuff.
Yeah. Shackleton's is mentioned in this book as well.
Oh, nice. Yeah. All right. Moving on. This one is for your younger self. So if you could go back to the Tom who was, you know, just graduating with his MBA, going into mergers and acquisitions, go to him, look him in the eye, give him one piece of advice moving forward.
Wow. I would say, just trust your gut, trust your instincts, and push yourself to do those things that make you uncomfortable. Because had I done that, I would have been a lot further on in my entrepreneurial career. I'm super happy with, you know, I've had a great career both in corporate world and now as an entrepreneur for the last 16 years. But I think had I started maybe a little earlier, I would be a lot further on now.
That is a common theme when I ask this question, is everybody says, I wish I got started earlier. So if you're young out there, you're listening to this episode, just go out there, get started. You're gonna be thankful you did once you get down that road.
Absolutely.
All right, moving on. This one is tools. Tools form the backbone of every business. So what is one tool your team could not live without?
Basecamp.
Basecamp. Good one. Management software, correct?
Basecamp. It's project management, but it's much more than that. It's actually become our primary communication tool. So instead of defaulting like, oh, I'm going to send an email, it's, oh, I'm going to drop this message into Basecamp. Mm. And so it's really been awesome for us, and it helps us track each of our acquisitions, you know, where it is in the process, and also our acquisition pipeline. And our capital servicing. So it's been great. And also for the leadership team. So we have a leadership team on there where it's just me and the top level partners, where we can handle some of those higher level discussions as well. But that's been great. We implemented that earlier this year. It's helped us to get very organized.
Yep. Yeah, I used Basecamp very briefly when I was in corporate, but it's a good software. I should look back into that one. All right, moving on. This is for the United States. It's a big place, a lot of square miles out there. What is the metro that you and your team are most excited about investing today?
Oh, man, there's a lot of really exciting markets out there. We seem to be getting a lot of traction in the Atlanta MSA. So we acquired a facility there earlier this year, and we're acquiring two more there. I'd love to be acquiring more like in the Lakeland, Florida area. We have two facilities there, and Lakeland, Florida is between Orlando and Tampa, and that whole area is just exploding. So just really, really love those markets.
Perfect. Florida is definitely popping off. That is for sure. A lot of people that come on here say they want stuff in Florida.
It's crazy. I mean, you go driving down there, it's like there's just construction everywhere. And I think 200,000 people moved there last year or something like that. I mean, it's incredible. My sister just moved there.
There you go. Proof in and of itself.
That's right.
All right. So that brings us to the very last question. You've given us a lot of good advice. I'm sure people out there want to reach out and say hi. What is the best way for them to do that?
Sure. I welcome folks to reach out through bellrosestoragegroup.com. We've got some free resources on there for high net worth investors that are just looking to get into alternative investing, whether it's storage or multifamily or what have you. Over the years, as I mentioned, I've been a full-time investor for 16 years. So I've seen a lot of different stuff out there. So we've compiled an ebook that we call The Safe Method. And it's a due diligence framework for busy professionals, high net worth folks who are looking to invest, but they're just not really sure how to analyze a deal. So The Safe Method gives us a framework so they can just walk through a series of steps and decide whether this deal's good for them or not. And just real quick, Gabe, SAFE is an acronym, S-A-F-E. So S is for sponsor. Who's running the deal? What do you know about them? What's their background? A is the asset. What is the asset that you're investing in? Is it in a good market? Do you understand it? Can you explain it to your kids? F is financials. You know, what are the financial projections? Are they realistic? Do they meet the goals that you're trying to reach as an investor, whether it's, you know, income or growth or preservation of capital? And then E is exit. How do I get out of this thing? You know, it's not like you can go to Schwab.com and click, click, click and get out of one of Gabe Peterson's syndications. You have to be comfortable being in a deal for, you know, 2, 3, 5, whatever the term is that the sponsor is laying out. And you need to understand that, you know, is that exit strategy realistic? And has the sponsor exited this way before and generated these kinds of results? So it's free on our website. You don't have to give your name or email or phone number. It's just our way of giving value out there to the investor world. But also at our website, you can sign up for our investor portal to see our upcoming self-storage investment opportunities. So that's bellrosestoragegroup.com.
Perfect. All right. And I will put that in the show notes, bellrosestoragegroup.com. So if you guys want to reach out and grab that book, just go ahead and click the more in the description. It'll pull down the description. In there, you can find the links to reach out to Tom and his team. All right, Tom, that wraps it up. I appreciate you hopping on the show.
It was great, Gabe. Thanks so much. It was a great discussion.
Absolutely. For everybody who's here with us today, thank you guys for showing up. You are the reason we do this. So if you have any questions whatsoever, reach out to me, Gabe, therealestateinvestingclub.com. Other than that, I hope you guys have a great week. Keep rocking real estate, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. All right, before I officially sign off, I have a quick announcement to make. If you're interested in becoming a passive investor in one of my deals, my own company, Kaizen Properties, is looking for capital partners for our upcoming projects. We invest in what are known as recession-resistant assets, mainly self-storage facilities, mobile home and RV parks, and industrial properties. If you're interested in investing and would like to learn a little bit more about my company, our investing criteria, and some of the previous projects we've done, go to the Real Estate Investing Club podcast at therealestateinvestingclub.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page. Click on the Invest With Us button. That'll pop up the investor form. Fill that out and we will reach back out to you as soon as we can. Or if you prefer a little bit more of a personal touch, you can reach out to me at gabe@therealestateinvestingclub.com. So really, that is it. Again, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys during this episode, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.